follow the trawler. It is because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you very much.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber on the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. Back with us again, Richard Wally from Portland, Oregon.
Woo-woo! I'm here, and from sunny California in the Orange County area, we've got Cassidy Robinson.
Yes.
The Garden Groove. Yeah, Sublime, I got that one that time, huh?
Reunited, and it feels so good.
I don't know what that was. Did you serenade me?
A little bit.
Serenading?
Yeah.
That was beautiful. Thank you.
I dropped some peaches and herb on you.
Oh, okay. I don't even know what that is. I feel kind of left out of the conversation, but that's cool.
They were the Black Captain and Tennille.
Oh, even better. Thank you.
Yeah. So you just got back from your vacation. You took a week off over in Florida.
Mm-hmm. In the Miami.
Miami.
Yeah.
Did you have anything to share? Did you do anything really fun, really exciting?
Well, yeah, lots of stuff. Well, what's nice about it is we stay with family. Like, I'm not actually really into, like, vacations where it's super touristy. Mm-hmm. And so what's nice about there is she has lots of Cuban family. And so we got to, as you would say, her Uncle Fidel. Got to stay with Uncle Fidel down there. And
forgot I made that joke.
Yeah, it was a good one. I liked it, so that's why I brought it back up. But no, your family, it's really cool, too, because, I mean, they're just so warm and welcoming, and it's like the opposite of white wasp families.
Yeah.
Instead of prove yourself to us, you know, it's more like, we love you and accept you. Eat a lot. Keep eating. You may be dying, but keep eating. And it's like, okay, I can handle this. I haven't seen the sun in like 3 months in Portland, so
yeah.
It was kind of, well, the other thing is I've never been anywhere that bright, so there was like this weird thing going on. I was like, what is this? What is happening here? And like, instead of like sunburning like normal, like just getting a little pink, like instead of slow roasted, like normal, it was like quick burn roasted.
Yeah.
So did I you have ever to be really quick?
With did you ever see that episode of Portlandia? There's this one where a bartender, they're trying to find this bartender who moved to LA.
Mm-hmm.
So they fly over there and they're like they like get out of the plane and all of a sudden like the camera just turns white.
Right.
and they're like squinting and they're looking at the sky and they're like, "Why isn't the sun behind clouds?" And they wear, like, these full black, like, burkas to walk around in L.A.
It kind of feels that way. It was a little like that at first. Like, I was pretty afraid of the beach for a little bit because it was too bright.
Yeah.
Did
you do...
My sunglasses never came off. Like, we could be sitting in a movie theater and I'd have to have them on.
Yeah.
We didn't go to a movie theater, though.
Oh, okay.
I mostly just got really fat and ate a lot and talked with people and went to the beach and other random places close to her grandparents' house.
Yeah. You didn't see anything like weird or novel, like, I don't know, some weird swampy, marshy, like witch doctors or anything like that? Run into a skunk ape.
Well, the skunk ape, yes. We saw the elusive skunk ape. No, we tried to go to the Everglades, but there's one road that goes out there, like only one.
Yeah.
A specific state park area called Shark Valley. And the day that we went
sounds safe.
There,
that whole situation sounds really safe. The one road that goes to Shark Alley.
Yeah. Yeah, that valley. No, it there was a motorcycle accident, like very, very, as we were heading out there, and they had to shut down the whole road. So we actually didn't get to go out there. So unfortunately, that means we'll have to go back at some point, you know, and go see it again. Oh, shucks. But no, it was kind of weird because so we tried to go around and see other things. But so we pulled into this one spot.
Yeah.
And it was like there was like three buses and just tourists. Fat white tourists taking pictures everywhere, just
sure
everywhere around us. So we tried to sneak around back and kind of go down this little trail, and this guy, basically this really shady weird character fellow,
the one at the beginning of the horror movie that tells you not to go there.
No, he told where he leads you there.
Yeah,
his name was Max. He was a jacuzzi salesman.
Awesome.
He told us about this other place. No. His name had to be different because the name of the other site that he directed us to was called Max's. And so we go out there and it's like this trailer park and just these airboats and all these really like these dogs and these way too small kennels. And yeah, it is literally a horror movie. It's just really bright and swampy. We did see some alligators and we saw a little bit of the Everglades, but we're just pretty much like, yeah, we're not going to give any of these people our money, and we left.
Yeah.
And we went back into town and did other fun stuff. So,
what you don't know is they followed you back, the swamp people.
Well, if they did, they're going to be really confused in Portland. They're not going to know what's happening with the...
They'll just end up starting an alligator meat co-op or something.
No, I did eat alligator a couple times there. It was really good.
Was that the first time you've ever ingested alligator?
No, that was like the probably like ninth. I've had alligator several times. I really like it.
So you've had enough to know when you're having bad alligator. I haven't been quite as busy as lately. We just started school again on Monday. Technically Tuesday for me because I have Mondays off this time. And, you know, just kind of getting acquainted with the material and syllabi. I think I told you one of the classes I'm taking this semester is a survey in cult cinema.
Yeah.
We had this guy come in as a guest lecturer in our theory class, and we all liked him so much in his research on cult cinema that they actually started a whole class for us.
That's awesome.
And he came back, and he's coming back to teach it. And so he's teaching it in the main auditorium, like the main theater, the Foligno, which is like a 500-person theater, and there's only like 20 of us class.
That's great. I don't know.
Yeah. And then, so he introduced the syllabus, what our reading materials are going to be, how we're going to do the class, whatever. And then we watched Rocky Horror Picture Show on, like, this giant-ass screen. It's, like, the nicest presentation I've ever seen of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I kind of imagine you guys sitting at, like, opposite... I'm sure you don't, but I see it, you guys sitting at opposite corners of the theater and, like, shushing each other.
No, what's actually really funny is that he's talking about like class conduct and stuff like that in that part of the syllabus, and he's like, it's like normally I would say, you know, it's academic setting, so it's obvious you shouldn't talk through the movies, but this is cult cinema, and a lot of these movies are meant to be commented on and talked through. So if it's natural and if it's not too obnoxious and you're not trying to annoy everybody on purpose, like, you know, maybe a little bit of talking is appropriate.
Okay.
And then it was like everybody was really kind of stoic and respectful for Rocky Horror Picture Show. Nobody even like stood up or danced or sang along.
No, you got to do the... I like the full silly spectacle.
Yeah.
Throwing shit and...
Well, we can't do that in the fleet. You're not even allowed to eat or drink anything in this theater.
Oh.
It's like, yeah.
Fancy.
But I'm really excited. Next week, we're not going to have class because we have to go on a field trip for one of our other classes to L.A. To go see a film archive. But we're going to be watching all sorts of crazy stuff like Pink Flamingos, Glenn or Glenda.
See, this is when I'm jealous of you. Oh, my gosh. I love The Big Lebowski. I'm really jealous of you when you talk about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's when you say other things like how much books cost and all that kind of stuff. That's when
then you're not so much. Yeah,
no,
almost $400, $382. Which I mean, everybody else is like, I was the only one who had my books first day because everyone's like, "Fuck that! I'm going to use Amazon or all these other things."
Mm-hmm.
And half of them are just getting Kindle books, and they spend way less money, but I like to be prepared. I don't know. So
every time I hear you talk about your program, I'm fairly jealous. I would like you to send your syllabus to me, and I will.
you'll just audit from afar.
Yes, from a very, very far.
I'll just FaceTime you on my smartphone, and you can watch the movie.
Oh yeah, I forget you do that kind of stuff now. I don't really texting you. Yeah, I understand.
All right, well, let's get started on our movie news. And I'm just gonna like rattle off a bunch of comic booky shit. As there usually is, the two big items I wanted to talk about, and I'll mention them in conjunction, AMC Preacher Project, which we talked about a few weeks ago, is now apparently going to be produced and written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg of Superbad and Pineapple Express fame, and This Is the End, which I'm wondering if that's how they got the gig. It's because it's like apocalypse biblical stuff, kind of.
Well, I heard that they were also... I guess Seth Rogen has been part of this for a long time, trying to get it developed, which is very strange to me, but okay.
I think... Well, the project has been going for a really long time, and I think he's just been following it, waiting for his in.
Right.
Because he was interested in doing it.
Isn't there somebody involved from Breaking Bad somewhat or something?
There's a showrunner... A showrunner who was a producer on Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Trying to see where maybe it says that. La 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 la.
Well, because if it's a Breaking Bad guy, that makes a lot.
Sam Catlin will serve as the executive producer and showrunner. I don't know. It's a weird mix for me.
Yeah, agreed. We've already talked about how I'm not so into the AMC. To me, I have to be on something that could go a lot harder.
Yeah.
Like an HBO, Showtime, whatever.
I mean, I think AMC has permission to go as hard as it wants to, but I think with they have to keep in mind that it's not HBO.
Yeah.
So I think there is sort of a hard PG-13 line that they generally don't cross.
Yeah.
I would also imagine with a show like this, and this happened a little bit with Breaking Bad, is there might be cuts of certain episodes that come out on DVD or on Netflix that are where they had to cut out more R-rated subject stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm also a little afraid that I like Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg sometimes. Two of their movies... I think are pretty good. But they're a little jokey and not in the same way that Preacher. Like, Preacher's humor is really dark and cynical, and it comes from a place of, I can't believe they're going there.
It's also very,
satirical. Nothing's really played broad. I mean, it's broad, but in a different sense than Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg can get, which their stuff is very... You know, they come from the world of stand-up, so there is, like, setup and joke, and you know what I
mean?
No,
yeah, their stuff is the stuff in Preacher is purposefully, like,
yeah.
It is trying to offend you no matter who you are, and I don't know, it's one of those things that's, I don't know, it's hard for me to imagine with all the names that keep coming up, and the station and everything like that, so I'm hesitant. Very hesitant.
The other one I wanted to mention is Paul Bettany has apparently been typecast as a robot now, because now he's possibly going to play Vision in the new Avengers.
That makes more sense to me.
It totally makes sense.
And I've actually really came out against the whole him being Ultron thing.
Why people were...
That's a lot of people's, like... That's a lot of people's theory of how the Ultron movie. I personally still think from Iron Man 2, the little drones that the big finishing whatever act thing that happened. I thought all of those looked very reminiscent of an Ultron. So I still...
But some people think that...
And I'm stuck to it.
So some people think that Vision is going to be Ultron and it's going to be a new kind of interpretation.
No, no, no. Some people thought that Jarvis was going to somehow be corrupted and become Ultron.
Oh, okay.
And, but now that he's coming out as Vision, I'm more excited because it goes into more into my theories.
All right. Well, those are all your theories because I don't know. I don't even know.
Yeah, I know. It's dumb nerd.
That's like deeper into comic book land than I get.
Yeah, fair enough.
What do you have for us?
Well, one of the first things, and I am really excited, a movie that's still just stuck around in my brain pan. I've only seen it the one time, but it just rattles around in there still.
Sure.
A film called Dogtooth.
It's hard to forget that movie.
Yeah, once you've seen it. It really is.
Yeah, but great that film.
Yeah, the director, Yorgos Lanthimos?
Sure.
He's actually doing a new movie with Rachel Weisz and Colin Farrell called The Lobster. And it's supposed to be somewhat, maybe Island of Dr. Moreau-ish is what they're hinting at.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't think of anything fucking better. Like, really, I am legitimately excited if that is all true.
I'm there. I mean, Dogtooth, I haven't seen Alps, which was his follow-up, another Greek film. And I think it might have been on Netflix for a while. We should check for that. But Dogtooth is a crazy fucking movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it is really dark, but kind of darkly funny, and I don't know. It's kind of indescribable. You just have to see it.
No, I think you're right. I think you do have to see it, but
it's kind of like
if you've seen it and liked it.
Yeah.
Because I did enjoy it by the end.
No, I did too. I think it's actually the more I think about it, the more I think it's a really smart movie, but
during the film I was very very confused at most points, but I don't know, to me I'm like, okay. The other thing is I've heard that this lobster, if it is Island Dr. Moreau, there's also a hint that maybe this was just somebody's joke too, but Colin Farrell may be playing the lobster.
I hope.
I really do too. I can't think of anything better in this world.
Let this be. That's all I can say.
Yeah, that's about. Yeah, I understand. That's this about is as like far up there.
This is up there with like the Tilda Swinton, Tom Hiddleston, Jim Jarmusch vampire movie that's coming out.
Oh yeah, that looks weird.
No, I'm way excited for that.
I'm sure.
Other news in Weirdtopia. James Franco is set to direct a film based on the making of Tommy Wiseau's The Room. There was actually a book that came out not that long ago by the one of the actors, the main American actor in that movie, you know, the one that like cheats on his wife or whatever, cheats with his wife or girlfriend, that
Something
actor.
Happens, right.
Yeah. He just wrote a book chronicling the making of The Room and how basically Tommy Wiseau was so inept that he rescued the film from production hell. Like, basically, he was just hired to be an actor, and he hadn't ever really acted before, but he ended up kind of having to produce it, kind of having to do script stuff, and kind of having to direct a little. So whatever we see that made it to the screen is really only because he was able to make it happen.
Get the practical stuff done.
Oh, that's his side of the story anyway.
Right.
But he wrote a book about it, which is pretty candid and apparently pretty well written, and it got fairly decent reviews. So I'm suspecting that James Franco's movie is going to be partly based on that. Greg Sestero is the name of the actor.
That sounds about right.
And the name of the book was called The Disaster Artist, My Life Inside the Room.
Well, I think they had a thing some at Cinema 21 or something around here in Portland that was about.
Yeah.
Because I know they do the Rocky Horror Picture Show for The Room here, basically, at Cinema 21 all the time.
Yeah, they have midnight screenings of The Room in L.A. all the time, too.
Well, what I'm saying, though, is I'm pretty sure he comes up here and has talked at that a couple of times. The name sounds right.
Yeah, probably. Tommy Wiseau is a little bit more elusive. He shows up to, like, to some events and usually, like, Comic-Con and places like that, but he doesn't follow it as much as the actors.
I'm sure he's confused.
Yeah.
About life in general.
He doesn't. I mean, hello.
Yeah.
But, actually, that's another movie we're watching in my cult film class, and we're having a guest speaker come in that day, and he heads some film website, and apparently he was part of one of the guys who first saw it and told everyone they have to go out and see this movie, and like kind of started the cult of the room.
True.
So I'm pretty excited about that too. But yeah, going back to this project, I think what I told you is this is a very James Franco type of thing to do.
Oh yeah.
It
was good news. I was like, yeah, why wouldn't he?
Within my grad class, there is a line of pro James Franco and anti Franco people, and I am always interested in the ongoing art project that is James Franco.
That's fair.
So that's happening, maybe.
I'm excited. Like I said, this only means good things. Even if it's a disaster, it only means good things.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully it could be something like maybe like Ed Wood movie or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, that would obviously be the high watermark for movies about bad movies, like good movies about bad movies.
Yeah.
Or it could just end up being a lot of pretentious twaddle, but, you know, whatevs.
Yeah, like I said, either way.
I still haven't seen Interior Leather Bar, which I want to, but it's only an hour long or 45 minutes long and only played in like two theaters, so I'll probably have to wait till it's on Netflix or something.
What is that exactly?
That was James Franco's project where he reimagined the 45 minutes that had to be, was legend to be cut from William Friedkin's Cruising.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yes,
but
I
he's
do
like
this.
He's like in it also as the directing the scenes. Like it's sort of a faux documentary. I don't know. It was really fucking weird.
I didn't know somebody was that into that. That's cool. Cruising was pretty cool.
Yeah, sure, I mean, I've heard that it doesn't have that much to do with Cruising other than the general conceit, and then it really goes off into its own weird meta thing.
Again, go James Franco, whatever you're gonna do, man. Just keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's the movie news, I think, for this week. I think it's your turn for the pet topic.
Sure. Sure is. Well, I had this kind of weird juxtaposition of articles that I was reading. Because, I mean, you're always inundated with some, like, Lindsay Lohan or Shia LaBeouf doing,
you know, crazy ass shit.
Yeah, on drugs or whatever.
Or Justin Bieber petition to kick him out of America and all of that stuff.
Yeah, well, that's another thing that was happening a lot. That was another thing that was part of this inquiry that I'll get to. But when I was in Florida, because it happened literally in Miami, I'll just tell you, the Cubans in Miami are very against him as a person. So you have these types, right? So you have your Biebers and your
Lohans.
Your Buffs and all them. But then you've got your other half where you've got people like maybe like somebody who was in the industry the whole time, like Sofia Coppola or Joss Whedon. You know, he's from three levels of writing. Or you have somebody like Leonardo DiCaprio.
You mean young actors who have family within Hollywood already?
Well, that have... Yeah, that they come from a long lineage, or they were raised within the system.
Yeah, Drew Barrymore as well.
Yeah. So you have some that they have. Well, she kind of came out on the other side. But what I'm saying is some of these people that do come out of the system like that, because Nicolas Cage is technically a Coppola as well.
Yeah, he's a cousin.
Whether he's a good one or a bad one, I'm still
on the fence.
That's on the fence.
Yeah. Still yet to be determined.
Yes. But with these ones, so do you think that the system adds to these people's creativity, or do you think it makes them monsters?
That's interesting. Do you mean more or less? Do you mean, are you specifically talking about people who kind of have like affluenza because they've known nothing other than industry their whole lives? Or are you talking about just people who got famous young?
Well,
or both.
I think it has to be both, because if you get famous young, I mean, it doesn't mean you will stick around, but you're inundated by that system.
Yeah,
you know,
it becomes part of your growing up process.
Yeah,
you know, or it could affect it.
Well, this is something that was interesting because there was a fairly sizable interview between Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah,
talking together with an interviewer. And in that interview, he says, when you grow up in Hollywood, mm-hmm. For me, the director became my dad in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I could see that.
And so for me, that's strange, but kind of like, I don't know. So for me, I don't know what the question is completely. What I'm getting, though, is do these people, is what?
Is that environment corrupting?
Is the environment corrupting, or does it add to it?
I think it depends on the person. I think a lot of that has to do with personality type. And I think, well, I don't know. Like, it's so sad, like, the Lindsay Lohan thing, because you see her in Mean Girls, or you see her, like, coming up before that, and she was, like, this really promising, young, good actor. You know, I think she could have been something like what Emma Stone is now. Mm-hmm. Emma Stone kind of, like, fulfilled the prophecy of Lindsay Lohan.
Right.
And what ended up happening is she got caught up in the wrong crowd, and she got, you know, she started hanging out with people like Paris Hilton and whatever, and drugs
that's the other part of that. That is part of that kind of conversation, because you also have all these kids are inundated with alcohol and hard drugs from a very young age.
I mean,
and can really afford it.
Yeah.
How rich is Bieber? Somebody who can, you know, a 19-year-old, 18-year-old that can afford a fucking Lamborghini. Mm. His dad shuts down a street in Miami. I heard a lot about the story. So, so the fact that you brought it up is like...
You're getting the inside scoop here.
Well, so they shut down a street, and he was street racing and slightly drunk. And his dad was helping him with this, you know? Uh-huh. So, I mean...
Well, and that's the rest of the story. And you have these show parents, and so it's like, how really well are they doing? Are they more invested in the money than they are in raising their kids? Yeah. That has a lot to do, I think, with what happened. But, I mean, you look at, like, somebody like Leonardo DiCaprio or Anna Paquin or some of these other ones who have been working in the industry from a really young age, and they're not as tainted by it. They seem to be doing pretty well.
Emma Watson.
Emma Watson, yeah. All the Harry Potter kids, you know.
Well, I also think about the Game of Thrones kids right now.
Yeah.
In juxtaposition with this. Because, I mean, they are very young kids that are in an HBO, you know, show.
Yeah.
How does that... What kind of influences and what kind of effect does that have? I know that they've got to be screened at some point, but...
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that their lives, and anybody who's primarily working on television, whether it be sitcoms or whether it be something like HBO, I imagine that's a lot less hectic because you don't really have to tour as much for TV. You go to the same studio at the same times of the year every year, so it's much more regulated, becomes mm-hmm. part of your routine. It's almost like going to school.
Sure.
So I would imagine that those people have much more normal lives than the ones who quickly become movie stars. Because you look at Lindsay Lohan, she was...
So there's
television.
More of a structure to it.
Yeah. She was doing television, she was doing films, and then she started recording music all at the same time. And I think she got stretched so thin and was being pushed around by all these different influences, all these different types of people. And then she lost control of her own trajectory and I guess didn't have a strong enough personality to reject the things that are bad for her. And now she's become this huge hot mess.
Well,
I think the same thing happened with Bieber.
Yeah. Well, what about LaBeouf? Because you haven't touched on him as much. Is that one where you're like,
not.
Oh, fuck that guy?
Really? I'm okay. I'm actually fairly convinced, because there's this whole thing that just popped up today about him, like, walking out. Like, he read some excerpt from some poem or whatever, and then walked out of a thing, a press conference for Nymphomaniac, which just opened overseas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking this feels more Lars von Trier than Shia LaBeouf crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that... I think he... Like, the whole, like, plagiarism thing, that's all LaBeouf. Because that was his project, and he fucked up, and he tried to apologize about it, did really badly. But all this crazy stuff now, where he's just, like, putting bags over his head and doing crazy stunts like this, this feels very much connected to the type of stuff that Lars von Trier does when he releases movies, where he tries to create this air of insanity around just the project itself.
Well, it could be just, you know, him as well, just being an influence to LaBeouf in this point in his life, too, because...
Yeah, the whole father figure thing.
Well, yeah, and just the age and stuff like that, you're kind of soaking in a lot of what...
I think it's very self-conscious. I don't think he's going as far off the rails as it seems. I think he's full of himself, and he desperately needs people to tell him when to shut up.
How could you not be, though? Like, and see, for me, I always feel bad for these guys. I don't, and the focus and all the attention to me is really, I mean, I feel bad because we're talking about it, but at the same time, to me, that's not the point of this conversation because, but them getting, I more feel bad because they're raised in the situation, they're brought up in the situation, they're literally thrown into the deep end at a very young age.
Yeah.
And I don't excuse them for what they do, but what I'm saying is there's a lot more going on there, and by everybody pointing it, and like if you
some people never recover, though, that's the dangerous side of it is you look at somebody like Corey Haim, who ended up getting who went so far down this rabbit hole he just became, you know, nothing and then died.
Well, the thing is part of that though too, I completely agree with you.
Or if you want to go even further back, that's essentially what happened to why can't I think of her name? Dorothy Gale.
Okay.
what's her name? Judy
Garland.
Judy Garland, yeah. I mean, the same thing. She was like the Lindsay Lohan of her day. Except for the studio system was so set in place that she was always getting gigs. And her crazy ass life and the drugs and the parties and all of that stuff was just being covered up.
Well, yeah, you didn't have the internet and all that.
And
so it was probably
TMZ.
A lot easier at that time. Well, I mean, but with them being so much coverage on it, and like I do feel bad because when you look at like IMDb or in a feed line, like every single thing that's talked about these people is like, oh, this, you know, this idiot, blah, 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 and just keeps going. And I'm just like, dude, he's just a guy. Like, nobody... I mean, you're just feeding into it. That's all you're doing.
Well, and the rest of the story is... I mean, I was a pretty boring kid, but a lot of these people, they're in their early 20s and their late teens. Most people in their early 20s and late teens make a lot of shitty decisions and get in a lot of trouble. They just don't have minute-by-minute coverage of it.
No, that's very true.
And so it ends up becoming this self-fulfilling prophecy where they're just living their normal, youthful, stupid period, and then people define them by that, and then they end up believing that and carry it on way past the age where they should be getting better.
Agreed. But the flip side to this, when we're talking about our Leonardo DiCaprio's and these other kind of people that do find themselves and, you know, become someone...
I think it helped those actors... because they were attached to prestige projects really early on. So that kind of elevated them to the certain level of classiness that they felt like they had to live up to.
Well, they might have, you know, had a stronger leads too, because I mean, if you look at Leonardo DiCaprio's career, right after the Titanic, wasn't he on the beach with Danny Boyle?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, shortly after that, he's been with Scorsese for years and years and years.
Years and years and years, yeah. I mean, really, as soon as he had a little bit of a growing pain. Haha, see what I did there?
Yeah, I did.
In the early part of his career when he was on Growing Pains and when he was, like, in Critters and cheesy B movies. And then I think he did What's Eating Gilbert Grape, and it was like after that point he was always kind of seen as a talent to be reckoned with, and he's been treated as such his whole life. So I think people has really kind of cushioned him and made sure that he didn't self-implode, and I think maybe talent, on-screen talent, and common sense are maybe linked.
Sure. Well, I think that that can play into it, but I think, you know, just maybe the right place, right time, right people surrounding him, mm-hmm. and leading him in the right directions, because I mean, I was thinking about it. I was like, well, you know, he usually picks pretty good projects as well. Yeah. Well, most of his projects have been Scorsese.
Yeah.
Or Steven Spielberg. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. There's just this kind of weird, you know, to me, there is kind of that influence. Like, because I like what you were saying about how so people telling them that they're shitheads all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just find themselves to be shitheads and accept that.
Well, they let that become the corner of their celebrity.
Well, I mean, because you become addicted to attention. Well, it's just as easily. Well, that's the only kind of attention you'll get, you know.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, the bad kids that keep backing up because that's the only thing their parents respond to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, is Leo the flip side to that? You know, is he the kid that grew up and got the right kind of attention and stuff like that? Like, I'm not excusing some of the actions because they are crimes and stuff like that. But what I'm saying is there's kind of we feed into that more than anything.
But no, yeah, it's an interesting question, and I think it's in this modern day and age with all of this technology, and all of the internet. You know, you have to, if it's something, news stations and stuff are going 24 hours. You have to fill that 24 hours with something, and so it ends up, you know, tabloid culture, which used to just kind of be the dirty underbelly of journalism, has now become much more the prominent face of journalism.
Well, and that's really feels like
a problem.
Well, I mean, not just 24 hours of feed, but I also feel like just the internet's always there and you have to be the first and mm-hmm. somebody to fill, you know. I even feel like sometimes there's a lot of like entertainment articles that are just like trying to muck up
something.
Muckraking, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean, I subscribe to a lot of different entertainment sites for the podcast, and it's always flooding my feed of all of these news stories, and I look at them to make sure if we want to talk about them or put them on our Facebook page. And, you know, 80% of the time I'm looking at it and it's like, that's not even anything. That's not even, you know.
Yeah. Mine's when you read an article and it's like, oh, this person offended this person. And then you read the article and mm-hmm. he just is stating an opinion and it's not even vaguely saying that. And he's not trying to, like, say shit.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's interesting. But we should probably get into our movie review for this week. Sure. This is a film I feel like we've covered a lot of the pre-production because we were really interested in that it could possibly be an Oscar contender, and then it ended up getting pushed to February
mm-hmm.
Of this year, and that is George Clooney and Grant Heslov's The Monuments Men. Why don't you go ahead and describe that for me?
Basically, during World War II, Nazi Germany was basically collecting and building and stealing big things of art. So the United States commissioned a group of men to kind of find these and try to save them if they can.
Mm-hmm. While at the same time trying to stay safe and stay out of or in the periphery of war zones in France.
Right.
And these are not like military men. These are all like art curators and architects and
old
and,
fat white people.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah. Professors, people like that. Mm.
Yeah. And so you get this weird kind of, because what's sort of fun about the movie,
mm-hmm.
In general, I like the movie. There's something missing from it that maybe you can fill in. I haven't put my finger on it
quite,
but I enjoyed the movie quite a bit.
Okay.
And what was sort of kind of fun about it is you'd be at Normandy, you mm-hmm. know, but you were seeing like the aftermath, and it was just a beautiful beach. Like, there wasn't, you know, people being shot and blood strewn through the water. And
yeah, it wasn't the opening sequence of Private Ryan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, that's, you know, that historical landmark. So you have kind of an idea about it.
Yeah.
You get this very weird other sense to it.
There's kind of a specter of death hanging in the air wherever they go because they're coming in after the fact.
Well, and also, I mean, besides after the fact, it's, I mean, they're not there to fight. They're there to just, you know, to find art.
Yeah.
And I mean, they kind of get mixed into the violence and they lose people and stuff on the way. But that's something that I liked about the film. Also, I thought the performances were all pretty good. Maybe sometimes a little like warm and fuzzy and safe, but
we should probably call out the cast here because it's a real ensemble.
Oh yeah, George Clooney, Matt Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman, that little weird fellow,
Bob Balaban.
Yes, that's his name.
Jean Dujardin from The Artist. Cate Blanchett. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, it's really star-studded.
Yeah, and I think
in that sort of Ocean's 11-y sort of way.
It is, but I mean, for me, this wouldn't necessarily be that far out of realms for being, like, an Oscar film. It's just funny because it got pushed.
Mm.
I mean, especially if you've got still things that came out, you know, like The Book Thief and...
Yeah.
There's other few of those.
Well, that ended up... That was also about World War II, Nazi Germany, France, and it ended up, you know, kind of being pushed aside as well. Yeah, I mean, people kind of saw through its Oscar baitiness pretty quickly.
Well, this has been, this has been a really strong year.
2013 was.
Yeah. 2013, that's what I mean.
Technically, this is now a 2014 film.
That's true. No, very true. But I don't know. I enjoyed it for the most part. It just seemed like it was missing some bite or something to it. I didn't mind. I actually kind of didn't mind that it wasn't like largely violent. It was a film about war that didn't have a lot of war in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I liked some of that stuff, and I actually got kind of emotional when they started burning art and stuff like that. And I liked the main body of the message, but the movie seemed to be kind of, I don't know, it lacked like a pop. Like,
yeah.
To me, it was almost seemed like that it was kind of like edited poorly.
Possibly. That could have been part of the problems here. I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was great. I don't think it's as bad as some people are saying it is.
I thought it was good, again. I didn't say great. Good.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I think I would go a little less than good. I think it's fine.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I think I think the problem with this movie is that your expectations are risen really high based on the cast and the people involved. George Clooney and Grant Heslov, who, you know, they did Good Night and Good Luck together, and their first film, which is Charlotte Kaufman wrote Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which was a great debut film. And ever since those two films, they have a hard time really finding their footing again. My issues with the movie is I think it's a movie where the message is kind of driving the film and every aspect of the filmmaking. I think you have this great ensemble cast and they don't have a whole lot to do. The characters are not particularly well written. They each have kind of a hint of a quirk for as far as what they're about, but those quirks aren't even really played up in a particularly interesting way. For a lot of the movie, you know, you have people like John Goodman, Jean Dujardin, and Bill Murray. And I think one thing this movie really needed to be is funnier. It's because you have a great setup, you know, these old guys who are not war people at all, and you could have really made this could have been something like an Operation Dumbo Drop, or maybe even, you know, if you want to go on further on the prestige scale, it could have been something maybe closer to MASH. And it
Operation just, Dumbo Drop?
Yeah, like honestly, Operation Dumbo Drop, for what it is, you know, a bunch of people going on a silly war mission, is better at being this movie than this movie is.
Maybe I'm thinking of a different film. Is that the one where they drop the elephant?
That's the one. It's kind of a tease, I feel like. This movie, like, it never quite gets to where it needs to be on a lot of levels. There are moments, there are individual scenes that are nice. There's a scene where, a record is while they're in a camp being waiting for things to happen, and Bill Murray's in a shower and they're playing this record that he got a message from his family, and that's a nice little sequence, but it doesn't really earn that moment because we don't know anything about his character or his family before that moment. There's one really funny scene towards the end that I think kind of achieves what the movie wants to be the best, and it's this a moment with Matt Damon's character where he accidentally steps on a landmine and they have to figure out a way for him to be able to safely get off the landmine. That okay. was that little moment is what the movie should have been.
Okay.
And then and instead you only get it in fits and starts. He's in this whole other movie with Cate Blanchett where they're possibly gonna hook up, but you don't know, but really you'd never care, and it kind of feels like a distraction whenever they cut to that stuff. I feel like the movie's a little bit of a mess, but a well-intentioned mess.
Yeah, because I don't think it ever crosses over, because I do agree, the whole thing about this being a horrible movie, I think that that's far...
No.
I think that's a little misblown, and I think that's just because of... It's not making money. So everybody's going to start taking pot shots at it.
Yeah. I think because of the expectations arisen because of who's in it and who's directing it.
Sure.
So we expect from the people who made Good Night and Good Luck, even though that's, you know, kind of long time ago now, and he's made a few movies since then, we still expect that level, and it isn't at that level. That kind of...
Yeah, well, I mean, film sometimes is a lightning in a bottle, too. You just get the right people, right time, and it's the full spectrum.
Yeah.
You know? And then this seems like it should be the right people at the right time with the obvious cast and everything like that. But, yeah, no, it does seem to be missing a pop for me.
Yeah.
Like, and to me, it is... I think it comes down to maybe... I think it needed to be stronger edited, but I think that you're right. I think that those characters needed to be more... strongly introduced or just a more prominent scene, because I did really enjoy the scene with the shower and stuff like that. And
yeah,
I enjoyed Bill Murray kind of making fun of the other one. I liked their little relationship, him and the shorter one,
Balaban's. Yeah,
Balaban's. Yeah, I thought that they had, but it was kind of weird because you didn't get this. You got a general sense. You didn't get a real clear sense.
They never really establish these characters very well. You're introduced to them in one shot, really, and then all of a sudden they're in all these scenes together where you're supposed to understand these relationship dynamics, like, oh, Balaban is actually really kind of a snob, and he, like, he makes these one-off cracks at the people, and you don't understand why. You're like, oh, I guess he's just a dick. I guess that's what he's about. And then, like, there's a relationship between John Goodman and John Dujardin that, you know, like, you're supposed to understand why these two particularly mesh, but you don't really ever.
Right.
Because we just know so little about them, and it's not really there in the dialogue, and it's not really there in the performances. And from these actors, you would hope that they would bring more of their star prowess to these roles, but I felt like maybe they were... a little too precious with the material because it was supposed to be a prestige picture, even though really it should have been maybe a slightly broader comedy.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I honestly feel like
I'm not sure about that. I think that would be going too far. I just felt like it needed a little extra oomph to be something.
It needed to push something further. If it wasn't going to be comedic, then it should have taken the material a little heavier. Like, if it's going to be dramatic, it needed to be more dramatic. It needed to be maybe push the violence maybe a little bit more, the reality of World War II.
See, I always thought that that was a wrong step, because I think that that would be an obvious way to kind of try to fix the problem, but I think that we've already got that film, like, a billion times over.
No, exactly. That's why I feel like, honestly, what would have made this movie more special is play up the genre film aspect of it. It is kind of an Ocean's 11 thing, but but it never has that same kind of bite. It never has that same kind of charge.
It just never clicks.
Yeah, completely. It just kind of sits there. It's really light. It's really nice. It's really amiable. There's, you know, and it's kind of well-intentioned and sort of old-fashioned in a way I appreciate. Mm-hmm. But it just never gels. It kind of just lilts along until it ends. And you come out of it thinking, well, that was cute.
Yeah, I think we pretty much agree that the best case scenario is they needed to add something to kind of make it.
Yeah.
More, it's something to gel it together, because I don't think that it should be much different than it is, really.
No,
I just think it needed something extra, or there's even parts to me that seemed maybe a little too long that needed to be either kind of cut up a bit or kind of just.
Well, like the Cate Blanchett, Matt Damon non-romance, that didn't need to be in the movie at all.
Well, I kind of understood the weird, like, to me it was more about the trust.
Yeah. And
but that needed to be, to me it wasn't about the relationship so much as basically the trust between countries kind of thing.
No, yeah, I understand the international quality of the cooperation of the war effort and coming to the end of World War II. I understood what it was all trying to accomplish. I just felt like, in an editing way, it really felt like the movie was meandering during those scenes.
Right.
And you always wanted to get back to the missions.
There wasn't a compelling... the one time that I did feel that it transitioned well was when you had the British guy... off on his missions.
The dry drunk looking for the Madonna statue.
Yeah. So to me, there was just something that wasn't weaving together correctly. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I guess we just agree pretty much.
Yeah. It's okay. For me, it's like a C-. It's like, when it comes out on Redbox, you can watch it and basically enjoy it, but it's not what it needed to be.
I think it was good. It was just good. Nothing extraordinary, nothing anything like that, nothing to get excited over.
Yeah.
To me it was kind of fluffy and warm, and I liked the general consensus about art in it.
Yeah.
What's important about art. I just don't feel like it really grabbed a hold of you strong enough to really make that message.
True, and I don't think the screenplay, some of those speeches by Clooney, who's directing this thing, it's like, obviously he's drawing the conclusion of art being, you know, more important than political discourse. And that is always, if you know anything about Clooney's political life, mm-hmm. it's hard not to separate that when you watch this movie. And it just kind of feels like soapboxing a lot of the time.
And I
agree with his politics for the most part, but it really feels kind of like, all right, we got it.
Yeah, no, I can see that. This film just needed a little more, but definitely rent it. But I would also tell people if they are, because there are a lot of people that go to the box office for these specific, you know, the more feel good.
Yeah, this is definitely going to play a lot better to the snowballs.
Yeah, I think that if you're into that kind of film, for me personally, as a moviegoer, I wouldn't recommend it to myself if that's a weird meta thing.
No, yeah, this is a movie for your parents.
Yeah, exactly.
And they'll like it a lot because it kind of has like a, you know, late 80s, early 90s, like Joe Johnston could have directed this in 1992.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
I agree. Okay.
All right, cool.
Moving on to Europa Report.
Europa Report, which was our Netflix homework, which you assigned me 3 weeks ago. And I thought about covering it with Brad and Amanda when they guessed it, but I figured you were the one, it was your homework, so mm-hmm. I'll wait for you to come back and we figured something else out until
you guys watched like Double Dragon and the Buffalo Roam.
Yeah. And we had a lot of fun talking about those, and it worked out actually that it was still technically your homework by the time you got back.
Yeah, no, that's I figured it would.
So this is available on the Netflix Instant Queue, and the movie's called Europa Report. This was released earlier last year, independently released science fiction film, and it's kind of your basic sci-fi thriller stuff about a crew that gets sent, and shit starts to go wrong. Mm-hmm. This takes place kind of in the future, where we've discovered that there is more going on Jupiter's moon Europa than we once believed, and we actually
future, that's like now.
People no yeah we
could be life
we believe right now there is speculation that if there's anything in the Milky Way galaxy that has life, it would be Europa, because it's an ice planet that has lakes and waters underneath it. This we already know, but we don't have the technology at this point to actually travel that far and be able to look ourselves.
Well, there's that crazy guy that wants to go and live on Mars and start his own colony or whatever.
Honestly, I think a lot of the Mars rover stuff is kind of informing this movie a lot.
Agreed.
And this is another kind of search for life kind of thing. You know, something kind of in the vein of Prometheus and 2001 Space Odyssey, and to some extent, a lot of the movie reminded me a lot of Danny Boyle's Sunshine, in the way that it ratchets up the tension within the crew. Even to some extent, even though I'm sure it wasn't intentional, there is some kind of moonish, gravity-ish type stuff in this movie.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, definitely. That is one film. The ones I agree with you very much so is Sunshine and Gravity.
Yeah.
I think it was unintentional with Gravity, of course, because these came out within the same year. And
that was being worked on for a long time. And yeah, I mean, this is the type of science fiction film that when you watch it, you'll see all of the influences, because it's in my opinion, a little by the numbers. But it's directed by Sebastian Cordero, and it stars Charlton Copley was the only person that I... and Michael Nyquist, who was in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the Swedish one.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the last Mission Impossible movie.
The lead scientist was also... he was a pretty prominent character in some of the first seasons of Dexter.
Okay. Well, you would know that. Yeah. And it's all right. I think it's a little under budget for what it wants to be. And you can definitely see how they're trying to work around their budget. There's a kind of a weird narrative quirk where it's non-linear. You have people kind of going back and talking about the story at the same time they're showing it happen, sort of in a District 9 sort of structure, where you're cutting back and forth from interview to the recordings of the Europa.
I just thought that didn't work.
No,
personally,
it felt herky-jerky, and I always felt like I was losing my footing every time they would cut back and forth.
See, I didn't understand. There was, to me, because by the end of it, they weren't doing that at all.
Yeah,
to me, there was no purpose in that editing other than to try to make it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't make it more interesting. I think the movie overall was kind of dull.
I agree. I honestly, I thought... I was really into Charlton Copley's character because he's clearly the best actor in this movie. Sure. And he's a lot of fun, and he's kind of the light, hearted character, a little bit more funny. The rest of the actors are not that good, or at least not that good here. I don't know, it's like every single, like, danger mission that they come across, it's like we've seen this in so many other movies. There's the thing broke, we gotta go out and fix it, but oh, we're starting to run out of air. And then there's, we can't contaminate the ship, so we gotta hurry up and figure that thing out. Or, oh, we're on a strange planet, and what's going on in the dark? Well, I'm gonna go investigate it.
Well, see, and my problem, too, is that that stuff, specifically all the stuff that happened in space, was the least interesting of the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like, to me, actually, and it's most when they're on the body of the planet,
yeah,
was the actual interesting parts. Like, and the fact that you lose one of your most beloved characters, like, pretty much in the middle, mm-hmm. it just kind of falls flat.
After that point, I agree. They killed the wrong character.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's even about killing the wrong character. They just, it wasn't done well.
Yeah, you even have like the girl who's a lone survivor thing, which is like all alien. Yeah. I don't know. To me, this movie felt like a little bit like a fan fiction come to life.
It was a pastiche of a lot of things, but didn't really live up to anything. And it didn't have really any. To me, it was like flavorless too. Like there was nothing to it.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really care for the designs. Some of the camera work was a little okay. Like, I liked some of the angles and stuff. But other than that, it almost never moved. And there was nothing kind of... The first time that the film got kind of interesting, the cast wasn't very interesting. There was always something that was kind of not working there.
It was undercutting what was happening at some point. Yeah.
And no, I don't even think it was the budget. Like, truly.
That didn't help. If you look at something like Moon, which was another high concept science fiction film that is referring to a lot of other science fiction, Duncan Jones is so talented that he knew exactly where to cut. He knew exactly how much to show, how much not to show. He and whatever was not, he couldn't do with budget, he could make up in the writing or the script, or something like Primer, yeah. Which was even lower budget than Moon. And then you see this movie, which is kind of on the low end of mid-budget, and exactly. It feels small. It feels like it's really struggling where to use its dollars.
Well, and to me, it seems like at some points they wanted it more minimalist, like kind of a starker design to the ship. But then it was like, I don't know, there wasn't anything consistent about it. It didn't seem like the details were really
ironed out
and what he actually wanted to show you completely.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like there was a consensus. So I don't know. I wouldn't
wholly recommend it.
I wouldn't recommend it really at all. I don't really see a point.
I don't either, because you've seen this movie elsewhere.
I would really just say go watch Sunshine.
Yeah. Honestly, Sunshine is, you know, and that movie has its own problems, but that movie does exactly what this movie is trying to do and does it so much better.
Yeah.
And not just because it's a higher budgeted film with bigger stars, because Danny Boyle knows exactly how to ratchet that tension and how to make those characters interesting enough that you care when they're getting picked off. In this movie, literally the most interesting thing that happens in the last, like, 5 minutes. And you wish that would have been the midpoint of the movie, not the end.
Well, either the midpoint or just, yeah. No, you're right. I agree.
There is a slightly Lovecraftian thing going on in this movie. There's a clear Mountains of Madness kind of angle, but that they're ripping off from Alien. But I don't know. I feel like unless you're just super into sci-fi and you have to see it all, this movie's pretty skippable.
I even think if you're super into it. I mean, I think you've already ventured into it on your own, because that's kind of why I brought it up. Mm-hmm. But I think it's pretty
forgettable
and not necessary.
I mean, it's better than a sci-fi original film. It's trying a little harder, but
at least you can make fun of a sci-fi. This one, I didn't even feel like I could really make fun of it. It was just kind of flat.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'd rather watch a sci-fi film just because I would be somewhat entertained by how shitty and shoddy it is.
Yeah.
Whereas this one never
This one was just consistently disappointing. Yeah.
Well said. Well said.
Yeah. Well, cool. Next week, we're going to be talking about science fiction films for 4 episodes in a row here, kind of like we did last year. And it just helps us, you know, be able to see things we maybe have never seen that we're interested in, and just kind of, you know, really study a genre, which is sometimes fun. And next week, I'm going to have us watch Dreamscape, which, remember when Inception came out, it was being compared to a lot. So I'm interested in seeing it.
Oh, that sounds interesting to me. I'm excited. I liked Inception, so.
Mm-hmm. Until then, you can email us at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com if you have any questions or comments about the show, or if you want to send us any of your opinions about our opinions. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. Like us there and you'll see when we post new episodes, news items we may not talk about, or any information about delays about the episodes themselves. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or Pocket Cast and be able to listen to us on your favorite mobile devices. You can read my movie reviews at salaforkreviews.blogspot.com, where I archive all of my Idaho State Journal stuff. And you can read articles that I write for the Seattle-based website, The MacGuffin, at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. And Richard, you are starting a blog here pretty soon.
I'm starting a blog. I'll just be reviewing random stuff.
Mm-hmm. As well,
whatever
as,
I feel like it could be just like grilled cheese sandwiches or something.
As well as short stories and fiction writing and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and of course I'll be advertising for this lovely podcast.
Mm-hmm. So when you have that up, I will add that to our spiel here at the end.
Oh, another one on the spiel. Okay.
Yeah. Soon it'll just be like 45 minutes of that and like 5 minutes of an actual show.
Well, that's kind of what it seems like people want anymore. Where can I find you? You can find me fucking when I want you to find me, you creepy bastard.
Yeah. And I've decided I need to be more aggressive about getting Twitter followers, since that seems to be an important thing. Like, I've noticed on certain resumes, they're like, we want you to have a strong Twitter presence. So, if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at BCCASSIDY. All one word.
Hmm.
Until then, we'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.
Bye.